1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
This is another episode of Talk of the Town. I'm your host, Tom McLaughlin, administrator, reporter, chair pounder for the blog, Your Riverside Forum. Talk of the Town revolves around you, the caller. Like the forum, you are encouraged to share your opinion. You can call in. The numbers are 648-5143 or 877-213-4329. You don't have to give your name. Like the blog, we respect your right to voice your opinion regardless of whether or not you give your name. We do have a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and are not necessarily those of Stardust Radio Network Incorporated or its management or other hosts or supporters. Tonight, we have two guests tonight that I'm really excited about. I'm really excited to talk to. I've talked to the first one before. Her name is Terrell Portman. She is at the Riverside Counseling Services here in Riverside, and we're going to learn a little bit about her services and maybe get her opinions on Riverside. Terrell?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm just fine.
It's been a while since I've talked to you. Are you staying warm?
Definitely.
Definitely. Good. Well, could you tell us a little bit about your services? Because I don't know if many people know that you're kind of tucked down. Tell us where you are and what types of services you provide.
I am in the same building as the Voyage Home History Museum. And you are correct. I am on a corner, and it's kind of secluded. And unless you know the offices there, you probably have driven past it and not noticed it. But people are finding it when they need it, so that's a good thing. The services that are provided are mental health counseling services. I'm a licensed mental health counselor at the doctoral level, licensed in the state of Iowa and the state of Missouri. And my primary goal is to provide help for people as they're going through difficult times. I receive referrals from hospitals and from psychiatrists who do the med management kinds of things. So,
okay. When we talked last time, we talked a little bit about you prefer to work with groups. Is that still your opinion? And could you expand on that a little bit?
Oh, I love group work. I love working with groups. And in counseling, we're talking about groups. We're talking about anywhere from 4 to 8 people. It can be some larger groups, but it allows individuals to work with each other. And the group becomes a social microcosm of the world and of families and of the interpersonal interaction skills that individuals will need. However, given my new renovations in my office, I don't have the facilities to do very large groups, so I can do groups of 5. So most of my work now is individual basis.
How big can the groups get? Is there a group that's too big, or is it just based on what help people need?
Standards to practice with groups tend to be not more than eight people.
Okay.
My preference is between four and six, and that's just because you want to have the opportunity for everyone to feel that they're involved in the group and to work on their therapy during session.
Okay. Are these normally people that you have seen in your practice, or like you said, you take referrals sometimes, or is it a mix?
It can be a mix. Sometimes there are groups that are just formed for the purpose of the group. Let's say it's a personal growth group for individuals who have experienced divorce or loss. And so there may be four or five individuals who come together who are coming to terms with a divorce or a separation, and it gives them a chance to relate to others and to find out that they're not in it alone, that there are many other people that have gone through those kinds of situations. So that would be like a grief and loss or a divorce group. I have held groups for individuals who have just received terminal illness diagnoses, and that provides a place to talk about it that is less restrictive than maybe in the family when the family hasn't dealt with the impending loss.
So you can have in these group sessions, you can have it in a, even with families, you can have it in a controlled environment where people feel comfortable and can express how they're feeling about their loved one's terminal illness.
Yes. Well, and family therapy is different than group therapy.
Okay.
Family therapy occurs with the family as a whole, as a unit. Now, I don't particularly do family therapy. I will meet with families to work with a particular client issue or a client, but I don't do family therapy.
Okay.
I'm trained to do it, but I don't do it. Group therapy really is typically people who do not know each other, who may have had the same shared experience, are going through the same stressors. It can be career-related. It can be people who are just changing their position in the workforce. So it really is dependent upon the group. Groups are a natural occurring, helping part of society, whether that's through churches or community centers. And so there's a lot of power within groups to solve problems and solve issues. So group therapy is used to deal with mental health concerns, life difficulties, transitioning issues with teenagers moving into adulthood. So there are various things that groups can do.
Do you think, and this is coming from a layman, I'm trying to understand this. So do you think that the reason why this system, that the group works so well, the way that I would think is that there are different perceptions or different ways to think about it, and different people, even they're going through the same thing, might have a different way that they're approaching their illness or their situation or their problem at work. Is that true?
Well, there actually is a lot of research on group counseling and group psychotherapy, and there are different what we call curative factors. One is the sense of universality, where the person is not in it alone. They understand all of a sudden it's a relief that other people are experiencing the same thing. Another one is imparting of information, and that's what you're talking about, is where people have coped with their situation differently than another member of the group, and so that member of the group hears that and says, hey, you know, I could do that too. And so that imparting of information. There is a sense of hope, an installation of hope that occurs within groups. So all of these things, there are particular factors that show that groups can be successful in helping individuals. And they go through stages. And so that's why a group typically is 6 to 8 weeks long. There are some groups that people have been in for years. But I don't do those type. Mine are typically short-term.
Do you find that people that I've talked to, there seems to be a misperception of receiving such help as far as, you know, counseling services or going to a therapist? Have you found that to be true? And if so, how have you helped people overcome that? Or do you just kind of let them come to their own in their own way?
Well, I think historically there has been stigma attached to any mental health helping behaviors or people seeking it. It's natural for people to go to pastors, to priests, and they're very well trained to deal with issues. But even in indigenous helping, there are healers or shamans and different things and around the world. The stigma that's attached to psychotherapy and to counseling has changed over the years. So when people are in crisis and they need help, they typically will seek out someone. The reason I'm in Riverside is because I believe in rural mental health and that people should have the opportunity to go someplace private that's not the big institutionalized hospital kind of setting. There's a place for that. Licensed mental health counselors do not prescribe medication. That's what a psychiatrist does. But the psychiatrist can do the medication management while the patient or the individual will go to counseling, like at my office, and receive the talk therapy, if you will. And so I think having it in a rural setting provides not only the human factor, but the comfort level. I typically do not have clients in my office at the same time that are not in the same session. If I do, I have two offices, and so I will step out and have the person go, and that's usually just in transition time. So.
Okay. I remember last time we talked, it was maybe about a year ago, and I don't know, if you don't have to talk about this if you don't want, but I mentioned in my notes that I sent you about the suicide rate of children who question their sexual identity. Do you still provide such help for children or kids going through such a hard and monumental decision or a situation in their lives?
Definitely. I would like, in fact, my office has a safe zone sticker on the window. We are losing young adults, adolescents, to suicide related to sexual identity, whether it's that they're actually GLBT or not, just the perception and the stigma that's attached to that. So being a safe place for individuals to come to talk to someone is very important. And a counseling office is confidential. The only reason that I would ever state to someone what happened in session is if the client is in danger or they're going to be a danger to others or if there's ongoing childhood or adult abuse. And so that's by law. Those things I have to report. Other than that, a person can tell me whatever, and it stays confidential. Now, if there are some issues related to court systems and legal systems that would come up, but so it's a safe place to express yourself and not be judged about what you're expressing.
Great. That's awesome. Someone is interested, and hopefully they're listening to the show, if they're interested and they want to call you and check out your services or just sit down and talk to you, see if you can help them, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, I noticed that there was a link that you sent to me. It went back to an old phone number. The current phone number is 319-648-2648. So all you have to remember is the 648 for Riverside in front and behind and put a 2 in the middle. I'm in the offices, but most of my appointments are made through telephone or by email, and that email is RiversideCS, as in Riverside Counseling Services, at live.com.
Okay.
And I see clients typically in the evenings and Saturday morning.
Evenings and Saturday mornings. Well, Terrell, I want to thank you for being with us today. It's always a pleasure talking to you. I remember our interview lasted quite a bit longer last time. you're a real joy to talk to, and I appreciate you being on the show.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me, and I know that this show's broadcast to veterans, and I really want to support and thank all of them for serving our country and serving us so that we can have these types of conversations.
Thank you. I'm sure they appreciate that. I thank you, and you stay warm.
All right. Have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Well, that was Terrell Portman, Riverside Counseling Services. You can get a hold of her at 648-2648. Or you can email her at riversidecs@live.com. She's tucked away there in the old Quick and Easy building. You'll miss it if you don't look. But I've sat down and talked to her. It's a very welcoming atmosphere, and she's a great person. We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to have Riverside Fire Chief Chad Smothers. We're going to talk to him a little bit about what they did in 2013 and what's coming up in 2014. So stick around.
SRN 1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town. We are about ready to talk to Riverside Fire Chief Chad Smothers, and we're going to hear a little bit about what's going on this year and what happened last year. Chad? Just a second. We're having a little technical difficulties. Chad?
Yeah, go ahead.
How are you tonight?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. Well, I appreciate you being on the show. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what happened in 2013, your accomplishments and maybe some fundraising events you had, and also what you have planned for this year. We also have a caller who has a question for you. So,
okay.
Would you like to take the caller first?
Sure.
Okay. Christine?
Would you like to take the caller first?
Chris? Chris, are you there?
Hello? Yes.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I am good. Actually, you know me. My name is Chris Kirkwood, and I am a city councilor. But I have a question that I got just out of the paper tonight, and I thought I would ask you. Senator Mark Chogrin, Republican from Ottumwa, is drafting legislation to legalize fireworks sales in Iowa, and evidently he wants the sales tax revenue to go to the fire departments. So I'd kind of like to ask you whether you think that's a good idea or not. I'm sure it's a little unfair to catch you like this if you haven't had a chance to look at the article, but it's an interesting thing. I don't know if you deal with fireworks. I'm going to go ahead and hang up, and you can just answer it for people if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Chris. Go ahead, Chad.
Oh, that's the first time I've heard of that. But, you know, we deal with fireworks every year. People are allowed to apply for permits through Washington County, through the Sheriff's Department. If they have, like, some sort of 4th of July party, typically it's just around the 4th of July time. We've never had any issues with illegal fireworks or legal fireworks, never any calls related to mishaps or anything like that. So, I know they're legal in other states, and you don't see too many problems with it. So I don't think it would be an issue if they were legal in Iowa. With the sales tax going to the fire department, that would be a big boost, especially for the rural communities whose volunteer fire departments really do struggle sometimes with budgets and money to keep equipment up to date. So.
So you don't see – we don't have a problem with them now. You don't foresee a problem with them if they're made legal?
No, I don't think there would be. People use them all the time without us even knowing it, I'm sure. So, we've really never had any issues with them. Like you said, people are pretty smart about using them, too, when they do use them. So.
Okay. Well, speaking of receiving funds and whatnot and operating expenses, why don't you talk a little bit about how 2013 went for you?
Yeah, really good for the year. We're averaged about right around 200 and some calls for the fire and the first responders, with 55 of those being related to fire type emergencies, and 155 of those were EMS related. We run on all different types of calls, whether it be a house fire, grass, or vehicle fires. Obviously, all types of medical calls, car accidents, water rescues, technical rescues, hazardous material releases. So, it's really expanded over the years as far as the types of calls and service we're called upon to do. And all of our members are trained to those levels to be able to provide the community with that type of service. Everyone on our department's trained to a Firefighter 1 level, which is a nationally recognized certification, and then 18 of the members are EMS certified also. So we have just right now at 35 members on the Riverside Fire and the EMS department.
Okay. Well, I'm curious. This is kind of a little bit off base, but I was curious, since you're the fire chief, you're the head honcho down there, why did you become a fireman?
I grew up around the fire service. My father was a Iowa City firefighter for 32 years. So when I was able to join a volunteer department, I joined Riverside in 2001. Since then, I've served as a firefighter and EMT for them. I held the rank of training officer, captain, last year I was the deputy chief, and then this year I was elected into the fire chief spot. So, like I said, I've been there for right around 13 years. Had a great time doing it. Really enjoyed the community and all of our members we have. We have a great group of firefighters and first responders. We've got great community support, which makes things really, really nice for us and easy for us to operate. And then in 2011, I was hired by the Cedar Rapids Fire Department, so I get the pleasure and joy of doing it full-time as a career and also getting to come back home and volunteer in the town that I live in. So.
Wow, that's great. So you get a chance to help people full-time.
Yep.
That's great. Well, tell us a little bit about what you have planned for 2014. I know a lot of people are curious. I know everybody in town appreciates what our guys do. We want to know if they want to contribute or help out a little bit. How do they do that? What events are coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. Every year we have two fundraisers, with one of them being the Pancake Breakfast, which is always held on Palm Sunday, which this year it falls on April 13th. And that event is always from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then in the fall, we have what's called our raffle dinner, which is held at the VFW. We have a meal and some drinks and stuff for people, and that's you contact the fire department to get on a list to buy a ticket for that. So those are our two main fundraisers. They're the only two we do. So we kind of do a fall and a spring type one. The funds from those two events go typically to fund our training program and also any specialized equipment we would like to purchase also. So that's kind of the two main fundraisers we do. And then, of course, the rest of our budget comes from taxational dollars from the city of Riverside, Iowa Township, and Highland Township. So,
great. What I know that I have a couple kids who are in school, and
yeah.
I know in the community that I lived in before, I was for a very short period of time on the volunteer fire department. I got a chance to go to visit one of the schools, and they got to look at the fire engines. My kids always talk about, every year they talk about how great it was to sit on the fire engine and talk to the fire guys. Tell us a little bit about what you guys do and your purpose of doing that.
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as the school visits, you know, in October every year is Fire Prevention Week, which is a week-long deal for schools. Typically during that week, we have school visits to the elementary here in Riverside, and then we also do some station visits for the younger grades. Along with that, we come up with some type of program for fire prevention. And then also we purchase, which with some of that fundraising money we do, we buy some fire prevention, different, whether they're water bottles, coloring books, the stickers, the helmets, pens, pencils, things like that. We buy those to give to the kids at the elementary school also as kind of a reward for participating in Fire Prevention Week.
Do they usually learn a lot? I know that my kids always come back.
Yeah,
I know what the stickers.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, and the teachers at the Highland Community School District do also a lot of stuff with them that week. They kind of have their own curriculum that's passed down from the state that they interact with the kids too on it. So, yeah, it's really a great opportunity for the kids to learn some safety tips and that. And then, of course, you know, like the Pancake Breakfast, it's held at our fire station now, but before, when we didn't have the nicer facility, we couldn't host the breakfast at the fire station. So now that gives the kids an extra chance to come down, see the trucks, see the firefighters and all their gear and that sort of thing.
What other functions have you held down there? I noticed that you've had you hold blood drives down there. Talk a little bit about that and what else you host down there.
Yeah, absolutely. We work obviously with the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center on blood drives. Those are held a few times a year. We've done different programs with the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. And then also we are able now to host some larger training conferences and classes. So every year since the station opened in 2007, we've hosted what's called Washington County EMS Saturday, which is a day-long program for all the first responders and EMTs and paramedics to gain continuing education hours to keep up their certification. That's usually participated with 60 to 80 individuals throughout Washington and surrounding counties. And then we, just this last year, we hosted a class from Traditions Training, which is out of the East Coast. And it was two firefighters. One was a battalion chief with Columbia, South Carolina. The other one was a Pittsburgh firefighter. and they taught a class called Combat Ready Firefighting, which dealt with just a lot of different topics in the fire service, and it was a day-long class. That allowed us to bring in other departments to participate in the program. We had 12 different departments from across the state of Iowa represented, and right around 65 firefighters attend that day-long class. So it provides us with a huge opportunity for training and meetings, and obviously our equipment. You know, the equipment's gotten way bigger over the years. It wasn't fitting in the old station. We actually stored stuff in other parts of town. So it just really allows us to expand and keep growing and to keep serving the community better.
Great. Because what I appreciate about you guys is that you are not only, for our safety, you not only keep yourselves abreast of the developing trends and the latest technology, you also, so you're expanding your knowledge base, but you're also out there in the community teaching people how to be safe.
Yeah, absolutely. We do a couple other events typically throughout the year with the community. We just did this month, went out to the Highland Hunt Club and did a ice rescue safety class for them for their, they had like a family fishing day. Some of our members went out and did a presentation for that. We work and train really well with our neighboring fire departments so that, obviously we cover both Washington and Johnson County areas, and we mutual aid a lot with the surrounding communities, so we all have to be up to speed, up on the same page and at the same skill level, and know what's going on and working together as a team, because it truly is a team sport.
It's all about the coordination and cooperation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our members put in several hours of training throughout the year. You know, they get their certifications when they get on, and then the state requires you to have 24 hours minimum of continuing training throughout the year, every year. We offer right at 75 to 80 hours a year to our members, so our members are going way above and beyond the minimum requirements of the state, you know, and then on top of that, you throw on calls and meetings and the fundraisers and the weekly truck checks and maintenance of all the equipment and the vehicles. Our members last year averaged right at 400 some hours per member volunteered. You know, when you times that by the number of members on the department, that was just right over 13,000 some hours volunteered by the members of the fire department.
Great. That makes me appreciate you guys a lot more, knowing how many hours you put in.
Yeah. It's very rare not to find, especially on the weekends, members down there on Saturdays and Sundays. Even during the week, guys are down there at least 2, 3, 4 nights a week, either training or working on equipment, making sure it's ready to go, maintaining everything we have, because it happens any time of day, any day of the week. You know, we don't get to pick and choose when the calls happen. You know, we leave our families at dinner time during the middle of the night. You know, when it's 30 below out, we're out there doing it and going on calls that, you know, takes away from everything, you know, that you're doing at home. But all of our members love doing it, you know, and that's obviously why they're on there. And, it's just a sacrifice you make to, you miss out on some things, but, hopefully you get it made back up.
Well, Chad, it's a pleasure to have talked to you, and from all the citizens in Riverside, I'm sure I wouldn't be lying if I said we all appreciate that you keep us safe, even when it's, especially when it's 30 below.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate everything that the community does for us. Like I said, it goes way back before my time and back to when the department started. We've always had great community support, and, without the community support, we really couldn't be the department that we are today. So.
Thanks, Chad.
Thank you, guys.
Hopefully I'll talk to you later sometime.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks, Chad.
Yeah, bye.
Just a reminder, that was Chad Smothers, from the fire chief from Riverside Fire Department. We all appreciate what he does. I've had a call one time, and I appreciate how quickly they responded and how they explained the issues going on. We all appreciate them. So what we should get out and support them whenever we hear about a fundraiser. Pancakes are yummy, so you should go get some. There is a drastic drought of calls tonight. 648-5143 or 877-213-4329. We're going to shift gears here a little bit. I don't know if you guys remember, It was pretty recent. I used to be on the Planning and Zoning Committee for about a year. We never had a meeting. And I even had the nice booklet and everything, and I was ready set to go on getting some training and ready to make my first decisions on planning and zoning. And at the January 20th meeting, I was informed, I wasn't even there, I just found out that I was removed from the Planning and Zoning Committee. Now, hey, Jeff, do you have that clip queued up, by the way? Oh, we're just gonna go right into it. They voted to take me off and replace me with who I'm sure is a very qualified person, Janine Redlinger, and I'm sure she'll do a great job. But Christine Kirkwood, Councilmember Christine Kirkwood, asked why I was removed, and the mayor acknowledged that my term had just started. But hopefully Jeff can pull this up and we'll see what he said.
Mary Jane Smoke, her term is up, and I'm asking that Brad Furman replace Mary Jane, and I'm also asking that Tom McLaughlin be replaced with Janine Redlinger. Continuing on that, Fred.
I'm not done. You said you were taking Tom McLaughlin off?
Yes.
And why would you be doing that? Because we're not last year, and his term is not expired.
Right. I just would think it's for the community, and I think it's the best with his position is in blogging and so forth, that I'm asking for his replacement with Janine Redlinger. She is a city high school government teacher from many, many, many years, and I'm just asking for
Okay, now that was from the meeting on January 22nd. In the minutes, which is supposed to be an accurate representation of what was said at the meetings, here's the reason that he gave. This reason was because Janine Redlinger is more qualified. Now, he alluded to that, but it was something totally different. It was total paraphrase. So I'm just curious. This is when I start to get confused about why I was actually removed, because in that reason, I initially thought, well, he's taking me off because I'm a blogger, because I was left to assume that it was because he disliked me, that I disagreed with him, and that I've written things that weren't too favorable to him just because I disagreed. And then I read in the Riverside Current, our official Riverside newspaper, that I was removed due to a conflict of interest. Now, I didn't hear anything about a conflict of interest in there. So at this point, I'm wondering, what is the reason? So by ordinance, we're supposed to receive such removals and such changes on committees by certified letter before the decision. I had not received a phone call. I had not received any such letter. I was just removed. Now, I received such a letter, and about the only thing that followed ordinance was that it was sent by certified mail. I just received it today. Now, I would expect to find no surprises in this, but it was like opening a jack-in-the-box that attacked me with a razor blade. I was floored. I'm on heart rate medication. I about had to pop a couple more pills. I'll read it to you. Dear Mr. McLaughlin, as you are aware, I sought to have the City Council replace you as a member of the Riverside Planning and Zoning Committee. The reason for my request was that during attendance at council meetings, there have been times that you have been disruptive and disrespectful to the order of the meetings. In fact, during the council meeting, I had to ask the deputy city clerk to call law enforcement to have you removed. I do not think that it sets a good example to have members of the City of Riverside boards and commissions causing disruptions at public meetings and showing such disrespect toward appointed and elected officials. As mayor, it is my duty to search for citizens to serve on the boards and commissions that will be respectful and represent the city in a professional manner. I do not believe you have done that. Sincerely, Bill M. Polk, Mayor of Riverside. So, of course, I had to pick my jaw up off the floor. But I wasn't too surprised because it didn't, it contained yet another reason. I'm not denying that I may have been disruptive in the meetings, but there have been other people at those same meetings that have been as disruptive, if not more. And the instance that he was talking about, the sheriff being called, I need to clarify that. I had gotten into a conversation with another fine citizen from this town, and it was overheard. The mayor acknowledged it, and then Deputy City Clerk Lori Young asked if she needed to call the sheriff. So at that point, I decided that it would be best that if I took myself from the meeting, they called a break, and I basically went home. So that's how that happened. It wasn't that he called the sheriff and the sheriff came and escorted me out. That's not how it happened at all. So at this point, I'm still confused as to why. Let's make it clear. I don't want to be back on the Planning and Zoning Committee. I feel that it was explained to me by my lawyer that technically it is a conflict of interest. Great. The current was right. I never heard that from the mayor. It's never been officially stated by the mayor. Basically, all that I've been taken off the Planning and Zoning Committee because of my opinion and maybe not following meeting etiquette. I'll admit that. That's fine. But I never received any phone calls. I never received any communication from the mayor, who said that he wants to communicate more with his citizens. Guess what? I live here in Riverside. I'm a citizen. We are a small town, and the mayor said that he wants to talk to his constituents. Out of the various reasons for my removal, the only thing that I can deduce, the reason why I was taken off, is that I'm a blogger and that I have been critical of the mayor. He can give me whatever reason he wants. But from day one, he has not acknowledged me as an entity in this town, which I obviously am, and I thank all my readers for that. And I'm curious to know what you think about that. Is that something that you're comfortable with? I'm going to call a public hearing just to say how I feel. It's not my intention to get back on the Planning and Zoning Committee. I think Janine Redlinger will do a wonderful job. I want to get my word out there because I don't think that I was given the proper chance to put that forth. So I'll go to the guy in the booth. Jeff, what do you think?
What do I think?
Steal the show, Jeff.
No, I'm not going to steal the show. It's quite tragic is what I think. I'm confused, and I'm not the judge, the jury, and I'm certainly not the third party in that statement. But what is going on? You guys had a Planning and Zoning Committee. It never met for a year. That's kind of disturbing in its own. Just my personal thing as a citizen. It's like, what do you mean that doesn't meet? If that's true, that's kind of disturbing. I hope they're more active so we can get forward momentum here. But most dishearteningly about the whole thing, Tom, in my observation of it is, you were on the Planning and Zoning Committee. You had a blog before the Planning and Zoning Committee. They never had any meetings, is what you told me. Now you're being removed. We listened to the recording that you took your little recorder over there to City Hall when they were having a city council meeting. You left it there, as you normally do, I guess, and you pick it up after the meeting, or one of your people do, and you get it back home, and you listen to this, and lo and behold, there it is. So we're just simply playing the public record. What that audio clip of the mayor that you guys heard was what came from that meeting, which you can compare it to the city archive if anyone is curious to see if it matches. It will. It said on there that he was a local blogger and a conflict of interest. And then, Tom, like you said, it came out in the Riverside Current in the city council meeting, not in the minutes, but in the coverage of the meeting. And it, too, said that the mayor removed you and put the other lady in because you were a local blogger and it was a conflict of interest. That's a whole other show regarding what constitutes a conflict of interest regarding people's First Amendment rights. But that's a whole other program. And then we look at this letter that they send you, a certified letter, and it doesn't say anything about the blog. It makes notation regarding an incident where, by your own admission, you got a little bit charged or emotionally charged at a meeting and had a discussion with an audience member, and I guess from the mayor's point of view, it was disrupting the meeting, so he had to call the meeting to order, I guess, and did such, or whatever you reported to these people earlier. Why didn't he say that in the meeting? Why didn't he say, well, I'm going to take this guy off because...
Right.
He had the cops called on him because he was disorderly, and we don't need disorderly thoughts. That's not going to grow our town. He could have just put that in there. So I'm not judging anyone. I'm just observing what happened at a meeting that I heard on an audio tape, which is accurate, what I seen in the newspaper, and then the next issue of The Current, I got it in the other room, it came out, and it had in the minutes, I find this kind of odd, maybe it's just an error in typesetting, but in the minutes, the official minutes that were from that meeting that we're talking about, it said something to the effect that you were just simply removed. It didn't make any mention of a conflict of interest. It didn't make any mention of anything to do with the blog in the official minutes, even though the week before the paper came out, it showed a write-up about that meeting, and it had that all in there. So, like, what happened in the newspaper here, guys?
We're
accuracy and report the minutes right, or the city messed up, or someone didn't take good minutes. I don't know. Somehow the minutes got tripped up there.
Right, we're getting literally from three different sources. We're getting four different accounts of what happened, and my head's spinning. I don't really know how to think of it. I mean, it surprised me just because I wasn't expecting that reason. This is coming from the same mayor who, in last year, in August, he said that the council needs to, quote, move on and stop with all the negative rhetoric, We need to stop communicating, and it is my wish and hope that we need to start communicating, and it's my hope and wish that we can do that. He ran on that. When he got reelected by only 29 votes, he was reelected saying that he was going to communicate with people. I thought, great. My little innocent little boy side of me thought, great, now he's going to talk to me, and now we can go have a coffee, and we can talk about Riverside and how we can help Riverside, and maybe he'd want to be a part of the blog and want to say what he felt on the blog and get out to more people. No, that's not what happened. He continued to ignore me. He continued on his regular tack. At that same meeting, after the meeting, he said to the Lori Young was helping out in the office in the interim between office help. And he said, I quote, if you want to give him the agenda, that's fine, but we're not going to give it to the blog guy. At this point, I'm saying no. He's not a newspaper. He doesn't deserve it. It's a destructive apparatus. How can you say something like that and have your brain not try to leave your body? It's such a contradiction. It would make my brain want to leave because it would be so disgusted with me. I don't understand how someone would think like that. And to Lori Young's credit, she talked to me after the meeting and said, I don't care what he says. I'm going to give it to you. If you ask for something, I'm going to give it to you. I haven't had too much trouble getting...
Well, Tom, here, let me interrupt you for a minute, Tom.
Okay, all right.
Regarding this, and this is interesting, and I, you know, you guys listening, if you've got a comment, you get the phone, you pick up the phone and call here right now, and I will give you the mic, and as long as you're not rude and you're a logical, sensible adult, you can have your comment. If we agree or disagree, I'm still going to give you the right to say it. 648-5143... 648-3101 or 877-213-4329. Three phone lines sitting here. They're waiting for your comments. So if you'd like to call in and comment on what you're hearing right now, we'd welcome your opinion if you agree with us or not. But anyway, Tom, I find it very... I find this very odd. You sent out a survey to the town. I'm sure a lot of you people in town got this. That you're basically exploring in a marketing survey, according to a well-written business plan, with all the attributes, including an incorporation waiting to be built. All have said to build a business here in Riverside, Iowa. Local, hometown, right here downtown, basically, Riverside, Iowa, trying to build a business here. And what we're finding in your case is because the blog represents the power for people to have an anonymous voice, which, you know, God almighty people, if you ever go on Facebook, do you think all them people really are astronauts? I mean, come on. So, you know. So, you know, social media and the internet today, a blog is such an antiquity in the matrix of the internet. We were using blog type platforms back in the early 80s before there was an internet, and we used to have to call separate modems on what we used to call a BBS system. So this type of environment's been around a long time. I don't understand how you, Tom, are being held responsible for the comments and conduct, and I will say conduct, of people that visit and exercise their right to their own opinion. And in this country, you don't have to. You can stand in the shadows and yell hallelujah, and you will not be punished for doing that. You have a right to speak freely in America, anonymously or not. So, Tom, as you said earlier, you read this letter, and he just got this today, he said. It's on official City of Riverside letterhead. It's what a genuine article. You read this letter on the radio, and you kind of wonder, what are we going to do? Well, what can anybody do? He's going to follow the protocol, and he's going to ask for a public hearing. And, Tom, I hope I'm not letting a cat out of the bag, because there really isn't any cat in a bag. At that public meeting, ladies and gentlemen, Tom will be given an opportunity in a public forum, in a governmental meeting, to basically have his blog on trial. So everything that's ever been written on that blog, from the beginning of it and all the history to go with it, will be examined, and it's going to be examined carefully in a condensed meeting. This isn't going to take a week to do this. And then sensible minds should be able to determine from the content itself if it's a conflict of interest with this town. If the newspaper prints something that you don't agree with, does that make them a conflict of interest? And should they be deported in a sense? Or should they not be encouraged to grow a business here? We don't have very many businesses in this town, and why not have another form of written entertainment in newspaper, magazine, or whatever? What kind of message does this send to the people in Cedar Rapids, Iowa? What kind of message does it send to people in Iowa City that this little town is kind of stuck, and then the only thing that they do here is things like this? And then people listening, Tom, might be thinking, well, yeah, they're hearing this crap because you guys are telling them. That may be. But the point here for everyone to realize is if these things, and they can be anybody, if these things didn't occur, then we could talk about spring gardening and all these other things that would be of general interest to the public on a show called Talk of the Town. But these things are occurring. Tom McLaughlin, nor myself, and I can say this publicly, have not done anything to influence the decision makers and their conduct that they exhibit publicly. So don't kill the proverbial messenger here. And I think, in my opinion, and I do speak freely under the First Amendment of the Constitution, Tom, I find it distasteful that the local city government is not doing as much as they can to foster new business growth. I mean, that may sound kind of wishy-washy, but...
You're right.
Well, what else can you say? I mean, it is what it is. This whole issue of why you were taken off the Planning and Zoning Committee, I listened to the audio that is exactly what happened at that meeting. The mayor said exactly what he said on the audio, and you were removed from the Planning and Zoning Committee. They have the right to do that.
Right.
Then we see it in the paper. They reiterate that. It's like, well, they're consistent. Good. At least, you know, that's the reason they gave you. You love it or leave it. If you're not on there, you're not on there, and they have the final say. And then you see the next newspaper, and there's an error where it's not properly recorded in how the newspaper put it in the paper for the official city minutes. And then last but not least, you get a letter that doesn't say anything about being a local blogger, doesn't say anything about a conflict of interest. It portrays you as, well, the letter, and you admitted that you got out of line at a meeting, but because you got out of line at a meeting, you are no longer qualified because you might have lost your temper. The cops never hauled you out in handcuffs anyway, did they?
No.
Nope. So you excused yourself and left the area and therefore defusing any kind of conflict or argument with anybody. But hasn't that ever happened before in a meeting? Has anyone been ever emotionally charged?
Yes.
In a meeting that you've witnessed or anyone else listening to this that's been to the meetings or seen a meeting on the video?
I sit behind them every other week.
Exactly. And if they're on, is there a message being sent here that if you're disruptive in a council chamber, you're going to get...
Depends on who you are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It depends on who you are. To talk about the... I looked that up. When I first started the blog, I was going to have comments on there, and I thought it would be great. I thought it would bring the town together, and they'd be able to talk their problems out. Never even thought that anonymous posters would be an issue, obviously, because we live in America. But I have had so many things that I said that was said on that blog attributed to me, and I've had to say several times, probably as many times as I've told people to not impugn people for being anonymous, I've had people attribute things that other people have said to me. I'd have to say, wasn't me. I'm not liable for that. So, it all goes to, they're scared.
Well, Tom, now let's look at it this way. I want everybody to go and look. Go to your Riverside Forum, and I imagine the entire thing's up there from the very beginning. You can search through that thing for days through the archive, right?
Yeah.
It's all there. Nothing's changed.
Nope.
Everybody, you go look at that. And look at the topics of discussion that the blog editor, Tom McLaughlin, put together. He encapsulated a story, like a newspaper will. He'll put it up in there, and now it's open for comment. In the newspaper, you can't talk back unless you write an editorial. That's a form of talk back. But in this world, it's a blog. It's an internet thing, like Facebook. You can respond to it anonymously. You can call yourself Cracker Jack. The issue is, even looking at the discussion points, which are simply items of reality that take place and have taken place in this town, it's the only thing going on other than Uncle Joe's cow got out again. I mean, when people go to comment there, even on something that's controversial, look at the nature of the comment. Even if the comment doesn't agree with someone's political stance, or what they think there is in the best interest of the town, that can be anybody, just because that doesn't agree doesn't mean, I mean, from the way this sounds to me, if I didn't look at that blog before, I'd think that, oh my God, I'm going to find, and this is kind of vile, but I'm going to find swastikas and all kinds of evil rhetoric and hate and crap and civil unrest and call for torches to go, you know, over to city council. There's nothing like that there. It's simply what it is. It's only what happens in this town and what people say. Are people's opinions a conflict of interest in the operation of city government? That, I just don't get it.
It depends on who you are. It depends on who you are. I'm not afraid to say it. It depends on who you are and what you say. They are frightened that people will hear too much of the truth. And that's not even presupposing that there's anything wrong going on. That's just, they don't want anything but what they say to get out there. This is just my opinion. That's how I feel. They have singled me out as I thought about changing the website to Your Riverside Pariah, because God, it's the looks I get just would, you know, peel a grape. I can't walk into a council meeting without getting leered at or whispered at. Of course, I always have a cheery smile and I wave at them. My mom always said, "Kill them with kindness. Kill them with kindness."
I know, Tom, but in review here in the last few moments, everything is what it is. If you guys disagree, if you agree, if you never agree, at least you thought about it for a moment. And if you can't begin to think about the problems that are causing division in this town and causing one faction to think A and one faction to think B, man, if you can't have discussion, which seems to be impossible, how are you ever going to come to a meeting of the minds and say, you know what, maybe that guy isn't so bad. Oh, I never knew he was a Cub Scout leader. I never knew that he volunteers doing something for any organization that's worthy. You know, I think the problem is it's too politically charged, and people don't know people. But until people can get past this political brick wall of contention, we're just going to be stuck in a rift. And I'd like to see what I keep saying. Come on, Riverside, pull together. Mr. Schneblin, you at least put that on your sign. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm not saying good, bad, or ugly, but at least that was, at least when I read it, I got the impression that maybe we were going to get together and the town would just kind of bury the hatchet proverbially and people could just get together and we could be a small town community and people really could pull together, but I'm not seeing it yet. I've seen examples of forward momentum, and I will say that Rusty Rogerson did a wonderful job speaking about the future of Riverside. I'd really like to have more people do that on this radio right here in this town, and this is a business in this town that's been trying to make its way here for going on 15 years. Some people in this town may have never heard of Stardust Radio to this moment. But anyway, Tom, I don't know. You need to get a straight answer, and I think that your best opportunity for an explanation will be in the required public hearing that they will schedule for you, where you can then present evidence and have them show how that is a conflict and how you're responsible for their neighbors, my neighbors, and ladies and gentlemen, your neighbors' opinions. Pretty disturbing. Back to you for closing thoughts.
It is going to be a time for where we can actually get things out in the open. And I encourage people to come to that as with any meetings. You come to the meetings just to listen. Go to the city council, city of Riverside page, click on council mayor, and you can email your council member. You can email your elected officials. I also have city council info page on your Riverside forum. I encourage communication. I encourage people to come and be involved in their city government and come to the public hearing and see how that's affected. That's all I have. Thank you for listening. We are going to be back, not next week, but the week after on the 18th. Everyone, have a great night and stay warm.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.